On the 11th day of October, Halloween gave to me 11 dancing demons, 10 Catholic monsters, 9 priests a miracling, 8 Jerry's vamping, 7 Jody's oinking, 6 body swapping, 5 Reed's a wolfing, 4 drunken uncles, 3 werewolf colonies, 2 spooky sisters, and a psycho who killed Janet Lee. Welcome back, everybody, to the 11th film, and thus the 11th day of the 31 Days of Halloween. I hope you've been enjoying it so far. I have been absolutely having a blast. This has been a wonderful experience, as it is every year. I like doing it last year, like doing it this year. Definitely going to enjoy doing it next year, knock on wood. Lord willing and the creek don't rise, as they say. Anyway, enough colloquialisms, enough southern idioms. Let's get to our dark business. And today, our business is dark indeed. We are talking about 1962's Carnival of Souls. And if you're anything like me, up to a few days ago, then you had never seen this film before. And this is one of those that I'd heard loads about. It has been referenced many, many times. I know some of the iconic imagery from Carnival of Souls, but I never sat myself down to watch Carnival of Souls. And so I did. And before I get into the movie itself, the story of how Carnival of Souls got made is almost as interesting as the movie itself. And what happened was, there was a guy named Herc Harvey who made educational films and decided he wanted to make a feature, because during his travels, he passed by the Salt Air Pavilion, which was a former like rental space, gathering space, event space for Mormons. And it was no longer in use because the lake that it had been built upon dried up, and it became just marshy muck and grossness. And so the Salt Air Pavilion was basically abandoned. Herc Harvey happened to be driving by the place and thought, hey, that looks really creepy. So he went to a buddy of his who worked for the same educational film company and said, I need you to write a movie. And all I know about it is that the last scene has to be a bunch of creepy looking people dancing around in this pavilion. And the guy what wrote Carnival of Souls was a guy named John Clifford. And John Clifford wrote the script in about 3 days. And so once they had a script, Herc Harvey ended up selling essentially shares of the movie for about $500 a pop. They also deferred some of the budget, basically took out some loans. And they made this movie for about $33,000 in them's 1962 dollars, which these days, probably about $500,000, something like that. You know, there's no way to find out. There's no calculator of money from one time to another. That doesn't exist on the internet. I didn't even know they had the internet on computers. Anyway, the point is, it was made for next to nothing. There is a lead actress by the name of Candace Hilligoss, who plays the main character of Mary Henry. And so the general story of Carnival of Souls goes like this. Mary Henry is riding around with a couple of girlfriends of hers, and they come up beside some young Turks, some young men, some young bucks in a car of their own, and they decide to do a little drag racing, and one thing leads to another, and they're going across a bridge doing a little rubbing is racing, and the car with the girls in it goes off the side of the bridge and into the water, and We then next find a bunch of people gathered around the shore trying to find this car and see if there are any survivors, while the boys, in maybe one of my favorite things in the movie, one of the cops is like, so you're saying that the car just pulled up beside you and they were acting all crazy and you guys weren't racing them or doing anything that might have provoked them to go off the bridge and into the river? And the guy that was behind the wheel is like, nope. We were surprised by how wild and erratic they were driving. We told them to calm down and also not to do drugs. But as it happens, Mary Henry causes a stir when she comes out of the water, and everybody's like, oh, she survived. Fantastic. And Mary Henry, meanwhile, is getting the hell out of Dodge because she has found new work as a church organist, although she's not religious. In fact, she sees it as just a job and doesn't really have any sense of spirituality or approaches it with any kind of reverence. And so Mary Henry runs off to another town, finds a room in like a boarding house kind of situation, and plays her organ for the local church that's hired her. And she's got a neighbor, a guy, at this boarding house who is definitely into Mary Henry and is certainly interested in getting a little action with her. But Mary Henry is having some problems as all this happens, because she has seen this creepy guy who looks a whole lot like the first zombie from the original Night of the Living Dead. And keep in mind that this movie is about 7 years prior to Night of the Living Dead. And it's almost certain that at some point George Romero saw this and was like, hey, wait a second. I've got an idea. There is definitely some Night of the Living Dead threats running through this thing. So anyway, Mary Henry is seeing this creepy guy. And in one of the creepier moments of the movie, she ends up deciding that she's going to go out on a date with this guy. And she goes shopping for a new dress. And sometime during this shopping experience, everything goes wavy, like she's having a flashback or something. But it's not a flashback, because after the screen goes wavy, nobody can see her and no one can hear her. And she runs around like trying to get people to pay attention to her, and she gets no reaction from anybody. And this happens a couple of times in the movie. It happens once here, happens once after she's trying to get her car repaired. And the other thing that keeps recurring is she is constantly drawn back to the aforementioned Salt Air Pavilion, which is this abandoned kind of amusement park. And when she goes there, she has this vision of all these creepy people dancing, and they're like dark eyes, dark circles around their eyes, and very pale skin, and they're dressed in suits and ethereal looking clothing at times. And so Mary Henry ends up fleeing the guy that's been trying to get a little action from her, ends up going once and for all to the Salt Air Pavilion after she gets fired from her job as a church organist because her music is sacrilegious somehow. And the priest there, not priest, reverend, father, I don't know, whatever you call him in the Mormon church, the pastor, I suppose, something like that. Anyway, he thinks that she's a little too secular, so he bounces her out of there. And there's some interesting stuff where Mary Henry clearly doesn't like being around people. She goes to a therapist a couple of times, who, you know, asks her, kind of surprised by her reaction, like, don't you have any interest in being around other human beings and feeling human contact and so forth? And she's like, no. And he says, well, don't you want to be with someone? Don't you want to be in love with somebody? And she says, you know, I never thought about it before, but no, I don't think I do. And so there's this weird detachment she has from the human race. And it's one of those things, I feel like, if you are an introvert or have been through periods of introversion, as have I, there is something really both unsettling and empathetic about her character, of someone who just doesn't feel quite related to the human race in a substantial way. It's really interesting. And ultimately, the movie ends with her fleeing back to the Salt Air Pavilion, where all of these people that she's seen dancing suddenly see her. And she also sees herself dancing with this creepy figure that looks like the guy from Night of the Living Dead. She sees herself dancing with this guy, and then she runs, and all of these, you know, presumably dead people chase her. And the movie doesn't ever spell this out, but the idea is that this is some weird vision that she is having after her death. Because after we see all these creatures kind of chase her, and she runs across the salt flats to get away from them, away from the Salt Air Pavilion, they finally chase her down and kind of tackle her and all pile on top of her. And then we see a cop and another character, I think it's her therapist, who have followed her footsteps away from the pavilion, and the footsteps just end at this point where she had been tackled the night before, or whenever this happens. And the last moments of the movie are us seeing the scene of the accident from the beginning of the movie, and the car is being pulled out of the drink. And sure enough, Mary Henry is dead in the front seat. And so the notion is that all of this is some kind of crazy fever dream that either she had at the moment she was dying, or it was something that happened after she died and she just dreamed that she was alive. It's a little unclear, but that's kind of what makes the movie interesting. So let me say this as a criticism of Carnival of Souls, just to prepare you for the viewing experience. And I would say you ought to see Carnival of Souls at least one time. If you're a horror fan, it is so heavily influential on other movies, and I didn't recognize how much until I watched it myself, but it definitely influenced George Romero. It definitely influenced David Lynch. And I'm a big David Lynch fan, as any of you who listen to the Duncan and Bo Come Correct stuff that we did on Twin Peaks knows. I think Twin Peaks is the knees of the bees, and there is a lot of Lynchian kind of sort of subconscious, unnerving kind of visuals in Carnival of Souls that doesn't exist in a lot of movies. Like, it's very impressionistic as a film. And so this is both critique and critique, I mean, by a negative about the movie, but also kind of the reason you ought to watch it, is that Carnival of Souls is really fascinating, not only as a work of art that influenced later works of art, but that in 1962, there is this really unsettling, very subjective, sort of experimental kind of art film. But the visuals in it are genuinely creepy, especially of the dude. There's one scene in particular where Mary Henry is at her boarding house and sees this creepy guy that's been following her in the lobby. She's looking down a stairwell and sees this guy looking up at her. And then you see him start to move away and start to come up the stairs. And it's really eerie. And the scene at the end, the last like 10 minutes of it, are chilling. It's really, really creepy. All that said, that's the reason you ought to watch it. The reason that I'm going to tell you, you might have some moments where you're like, I don't know about this movie. Even though it's only like 80 minutes long, it's not super long. And that's another reason you ought to watch it, because 80 minutes out of your life isn't that much. and you're probably going to watch a bunch of other crap that isn't nearly as good, and that you're going to be a better person for having seen Carnival of Souls, even if you never watch it again. And I probably will watch it again. It's definitely a movie. I don't know that I will watch it in a, like, I'm going to sit down and super focus on this, but I will definitely watch it in a, hey, I'm going to throw this on, and in the moments that it gets really good and creepy, I'm going to stop and watch those scenes intently. But there are stretches of the movie that are very arch in their presentation. That, you know, the acting feels very exaggerated at times. In much the same way that, like, a Night of the Living Dead can. You know, Judith O'Day, who plays Barbara, has kind of the same vibe as Candace Hillegas. Looks a little bit like her as well, now that I think about it. And so there is that element that it's an acting style that is, you know, a little theatrical compared to modern performances. And so that can be a little distracting. It's super low budget, so there's a lot of, you know, non-actors that are in the movie that also are not great. But you can also argue that that adds to a little bit of the sense of otherworldliness of the movie itself. But still, it can be, you know, in the moment-to-moment stuff, there can be a little bit of downtime, a little bit of a slog feel to some of it, because it is so, it is so surreal at times that it's hard to kind of dig your fingers into and feel like you're dealing with something that's substantial. So, you know, be warned that this is an artsy-fartsy movie circa 60 years ago. But I feel like I'm damning with faint praise, but I do think it's something that you ought to see, especially this time of year. It's a great movie to kind of lower the lights and you know, get the bowl of popcorn and just kind of let the movie happen to you. And when you get to the end of it, you're rewarded for all the stuff where you're like, this whole scene of her and this guy in a bar where he wants to get a little action and she doesn't want to give it up, but also she doesn't want to be alone. You know, you're going to feel that there's some tedium going on in that scene, but stick with it, because 15 minutes later, you are in this crazy dream world where nightmare monsters are coming out of this gross water and trying to get her. And that stuff is like I said, it's really creepy. And more than that, you can't help but think of Night of the Living Dead through much of this movie. And the same things that work in the original Night of the Living Dead work here, which is this sense of, like, there are these things coming after me and there's no way I can stop them. And at the end of the day, you can't. And they just get you. And I that's really unnerving to me. And I really, really like that part of it. It feels reminiscent of, like, German expressionist films. You know, if you could see this movie at a drive-in, that's almost the perfect setting for something like this. Although it is on, is it on Shudder, I think, is where I saw it. One of them places, one of them streaming platforms, but I think Shudder has it. Shudder or HBO One. Maybe it was HBO now that I think about it. But it's really good. It's not great, but parts of it are great. But parts of it are not so great. And so that's why it averages out to good. That's how my math works. But I'm really glad I watched it. It was one of those, this movie and the next two are movies I've never seen before, and they're kind of horror classics. This is me sort of checking some stuff off the bucket list as I have this conversation with you, this ongoing once a day conversation about horror movies. And I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I watched it, and there are scenes from it I look forward to watching again. And I absolutely think everybody who is a horror fan should sit down and watch this movie one time. And more importantly, if you have seen Carnival of Souls and you don't think I'm giving credit where credit's due, let me know. If you do think I'm giving credit where credit's due and you also have problems, let me know that too. Because I think this is an interesting movie and it's a movie worth having a conversation about. So this is my awkward one-sided conversation where I'm still kind of working out my feelings about it, but I know that what I saw was not just influential, but it was good in its own right. So that's where I am with it right now. Please talk to me so I can help form my opinion further. Anyway, that's going to do it for today. This is a little bit of a weird one. I thought this was much shorter than it was, but then I realized that we've been talking about this for 20 minutes because I can't seem to just talk for five. So thanks for listening to these, by the way. Thanks for interacting. Thanks for letting me know what you think. I'm starting to get a little bit of feedback from people who are listening to the early episodes, and it is the best. So please, you can look me up on Twitter and Instagram at Legion Podcasts. You can also find the group and or page for Legion Podcasts, where you will find daily posts about these particular episodes. Feel free to leave some comments there. And I would be remiss if I did not say I have a brand new podcast where all the horror stuff that I do can be found. That is called The Dark Parade. There is a Facebook group for that. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Dark Parade Pod, at both those places. And I think that's it. I think that's all the social media stuff I've got. There's also a Discord channel, but, you know, hit me up if you're interested in that. And that's it. Tomorrow we will be back with our 12th film as we close in on the end of our second week of the 31 Days of Halloween, which means we are almost half done, and that's a real bummer. But we've got a lot of great stuff ahead of us. I got some more kind of runs of movies that are all built around a theme a little bit, and that's going to start around the 15th. But there is still time, if you are listening to this, to make some recommendations. So you can tag me or add me at any of those social media channels and let me know what you think I ought to be watching for the back end of October. Okay, that's it for now. Guys, thanks so much. Have a great day. I hope you're enjoying your Halloween season as much as I am, because I'm maybe having my favorite Halloween that I've ever had. I hope that you are as enthusiastic as I am. So go out there and be spooky to the rest of the world. And we'll see you right back here tomorrow for another of the 31 Days of Halloween. See you then.